Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
This episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Audible, and you listeners can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free 30-day trial and get a free audiobook.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where it's always Garrett Morris's birthday. I'm your host, Solid Waste Kisser Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and can I throw up in your bathroom? I'll buy something.
Sure, and who else?
Chris Antista, otherwise known as the better half of the waffle.
Excellent, and today's episode is Marge on the Lam.
Sorry, line of the show, getting it out there already.
That was a great, one of our favorite clips we've heard here.
And today's episode aired on November 4th, 1993, and Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real life history.
Jesus Christ!
Oh my God!
You know what? Polish up those belt buckles, goth kids, because Nightmare Before Christmas is now in theaters.
Yes, wow. I was there. Ooh.
Warner Brothers announces a new network to compete with the Big Four, and legendary Italian filmmaker Federico Fellini, actor River Phoenix, and Joan Rivers' syndicated talk show are all dead.
Aww.
This week.
Fellini is... I know I'm going to sound just like a snob, but his films were amazing. They really were.
I heard he's pretty good.
Have you not at least watch 8 and a Half or La Dolce Vita? Both of those are it's
what
like
about
masterpieces.
Come on.
The coffee shop I go to almost every morning is named after him, Cafe Fellini.
Oh wow, yeah. I didn't know that. Now, I love Fellini films, and yeah, I saw it in theaters. Nightmare Before Christmas. I was there day
Still
one.
Don't like it.
I was there day one and not a goth. Yes,
yeah.
Or ever.
I loved it as a musical. And when it becomes less of a musical in the second half, I was like, what happened to music?
I just loved it as a fan of animation and Tim Burton, especially at the time.
I mean, Oogie Boogie, especially Unmasked, is a triumph of stop motion animation.
And that puppet is the size of a toddler, like a fat toddler.
And it
looks better in Kingdom Hearts.
And none of that credit goes to Tim Burton. None of it. It's Tim
Henry
Burton's
Selick's Nightmare Before Christmas.
It's so wrong that he gets the credit for
it's
that.
Like,
everybody thinks he directed
they just
it.
Tore a few pages out of a Disney sketchbook and then they made a movie out of it.
Yeah, it's smart of that guy to just divorce from him, like, no, I'm just gonna make Coraline and be famous on my own. I'm awesome.
Was he the guy behind Kubo?
Kubo,
Paranorman, and Coraline. Three fucking fantastic movies if you're an animation fan.
And this episode is the exciting return of Ruth Powers.
Yes, and I wanted to point out one thing. Oh, go ahead,
stupid
Chris.
Irony, I let my girlfriend pick the film that we watched one time this weekend, and it just happened to be Thelma and Louise. I'd never seen it before.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's fucking awesome.
So Ridley Scott makes one good movie per decade.
Is it Ridley or Tony?
It's Ridley Scott.
Okay.
And I think you said this before, Chris. He makes the movies that nobody watches.
He makes the movies that come out in between good ones.
Okay, there you go.
They're neither bad nor great.
Like, I haven't seen a good year.
I have Cinderella. No, that's in the Cinderella Man.
That's
Prometheus and in The Martian, which are just so... Like, this would have been so much better. Matchstick Men. Blech!
Yeah.
Robin Hood, blech!
So I wanted to make a little note about the writer of this episode. He was only on The Simpsons for one season, Bill Canterbury. He wrote this episode. He would go on to be on Duckman for the rest of its run after season 5 of The Simpsons. So,
yes!
He was a major key player in Duckman, who I think poached a few of The Simpsons writers.
Because it was a Klasky Csupo production. And, it is my hope that when we get to more of the Simpsons spin-offs-ish type things like Duckman and The Critic... that we'll do an episode of those each time it premieres. When
right.
we get to that.
I would love to do that, especially with Duck. I have to find a way to work Duckman into most of the things I do. I'm the one person who remembers it, and that's my goal.
You're not alone, Bob.
But yeah, I'd never heard of Canterbury before. Mm. He's never on the commentary, so it makes him hard to remember. He probably just moved out of L.A. and isn't TV anymore.
He did write the vampire segment in the last Treehouse of Horror episode, so that was him. And Thelma Louise, so Cape Fear was not a timely parody, and neither is this. That movie premiered two plus years before this episode aired. It was May 24th, 1991. Mm-hmm. But at this time in our world, VHS tapes of movies would take forever to actually hit stores. Yeah. So maybe it was a fresh VHS release, and why they were able to make an episode.
The rental units cost like $200.
Yes.
There'd be three per store. You'd have to wait to watch the movie. Holy shit.
The only thing that's wrong with Thelma and Louise now that makes it feel dated is just like, well, they should just fuck. Like, it's just they go all the way with it, and it's just like, they should just have sex.
Just all the sequences this is parodying, for the most part, are some of the most beautifully shot practical effects sequences I have ever seen.
Oh, yeah, it's a very well-shot movie.
Like, a giant car chase in the desert. It looks so good. There's a helicopter flying in a canyon to hide themselves from two women. Hmm. Why is this looks gorgeous? Like, this looks insane.
And but this starts with a joke my mom didn't particularly like.
I know Chris can explain it.
I can.
Well, sir, it has been an uneventful week in Badger Falls, where the women are robust, the men are pink cheeked, and the children are pink cheeked and robust.
What the hell's so funny?
I love how they captured the sound of him breathing, because I did not discover Garrison Keillor until I was in college, started listening to the AM radio at NPR.
Yeah.
And he would have that poetry corner, and it was always made me want to drive off the road into a tree, because it was just like...
Have you heard the one of him describing a car very sexually?
No.
Look it up, guys. Garrison Keillor car poem.
It's great. It's Harry Shearer, fellow NPR alum.
Yes.
Making fun of Garrison Keillor, the host of Prairie Home Companion. I find myself in this position a lot. My smart, progressive, art-loving friends really hate Prairie Home Companion, and I sort of understand why. Here's a clip of what exactly that clip is parodying.
It doesn't matter if you've been a bad dad, she thought. It just doesn't matter. Winter simplifies everything. It comes down to either in here or out there. Someday, he'll be out there. Right now, he's in here. Take care of him. That's the news from Lake Wobegon.
Where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, all the children are above that.
You know what? I'm Midwestern as fuck. Mm-hmm. I spent 28 years in Ohio. I feel like I should be more connected to this, but it just doesn't hit me.
The only defense I have for it, and I do unabashedly love Prairie Home Companion and Garrison Keillor. I was raised on Lake Wobegon tapes. That is the fake town he writes whimsical tales from with made-up characters, ends it with that sequence.
Comedic short stories.
But like, very, like, you could call them bland, but like bland slices of life. But what Prairie Home Companion is the same way, I don't know, the way, like, maybe you or I would, like, get into grindhouse films. We weren't around for that era. So Prairie Home Companion is my father's nostalgia. Mm. So he loves this show. Because he grew up with one foot in the variety show, homespun, folksy, let's do monologues, comedy sketches, and musical performances on the radio.
It does feel immediately post-war, I think.
Yeah. He grew up with that, and it's his nostalgia. So I think when our generation and generations younger hear it, they just get infuriated because there's no nostalgia for it.
I love that there's nothing else like it. Mm-hmm. I wish there were those shows on radio. And I guess that's maybe a thing that I don't like about Garrison Keillor. It's like, you're my only choice for this type of thing. I wish I'd like to see how someone else would handle it, though. Now he's just been on his retirement death march.
I was happy. I was there live in Chicago to watch the third to last Prairie Home Companion ever.
Oh, wow.
That's the kind of fan I am. We stayed up till 4 a.m. to get tickets for me and my lady friend. I've seen the show live twice.
David Merkin, showrunner, does not like Garrison Keillor. And he pointed out that Garrison Keillor moved to Paris after this episode aired, so he thinks this is what did it. And unfortunately, he moved back, so he said they need to start making fun of him some more so he can move away once again.
Meanwhile, Matt Groening was like, oh, but I like Garrison.
Yeah,
he's hung out with Garrison Keillor at liberal functions.
He was on his retirement tour. Like, I didn't know you could care that that much about this, because like it's very easily avoidable to avoid a folksy 2-hour radio show. But my liberal friends fucking hate it because they listen to NPR, and I guess you're trapped for there's not a lot of other 2-hour programs.
It's just really the sound of his inner mouth flaps that I hear.
That Harry Shearer nailed the wind.
Yeah. This is the ASMR podcast now.
I also didn't like in the Prairie Home Companion film by Robert Altman that Meryl Streep, a woman played by Meryl Streep, would have ever had sex with him. I'm like, no, no. And then Lindsay Lohan plays his daughter, too.
I forgot she was in that.
Yeah.
But seeing a live...
Final Altman film, also.
Final Altman film. It's weird.
Woody Harrelson's pretty funny. It's a good film.
They had in the
Kevin
contract...
Kevin Kline plays Guy Threepwood. No,
Guy Threepwood?
Fedora.
No,
Guy...
What Guy Threepwood is? That's
Guybrush Threepwood from Monkey Island.
Yeah, I know. Guy Noir, Private.
Guy Noir. There you go.
But as a real detective researching it, it's a fun movie. Last Garrison Keillor clip, because it comes into a character we all can agree is amazing.
Sven Ingquist studied the menu, and finally he ordered the same thing he has every day.
Okay. Maybe it's the TV.
Be more funny.
That's great.
It's almost my line of the show, but the cutaway to the self-satisfied white laughter
in
the audience is so astute.
I think your clip is more accurate, Chris, though. It's more like polite applause, like, yes, that was good, yes.
No, I've been to a live show. People guffaw and over.
Okay.
And again, I've never been to a live event with so many people that old. Like, the moment it's over, there's a mad dash of walkers and canes to get to the parking lot first.
Oh.
Like, they'll even... This is, there's like the third to last show, and you're leaving 10 minutes ahead of time so you can get out earlier.
There's Metamucil litter all over the floor.
But I like it. And here's... Sorry, this is the one where, finally, this Garrison character...
Well, sir, I think it is time to turn this pledge drive over to Troy McClure. I can't keep up this pace forever.
Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from such telethons as Out with Gout 88 and Let's Save Tony Orlando's House. Folks, do you realize without your support, public television can't afford to bring you such award-winning shows as Edward the Penitent?
I love this.
I'm really, really, really sorry.
I'm afraid sorry doesn't cut it with this Pope.
What the hell?
I love that.
Oh, we got a call.
Some idiot actually called in.
Hello, what's your name?
Marge Simpson. I'd like to pledge $30. Oh, thank you.
Marge, it's public TV. They never have anything good. Where are the Geraldos? Where are the Eubankses?
They need our support. Besides, they gave me 2 tickets to the ballet.
The ballet? Woohoo!
I really love Edward the Penitent. It's the most perfect, boring PBS show, a period drama about a historical figure you know nothing about and don't care about.
Yes.
It's cheap filler from the BBC.
I don't know if it's a joke. Then, like, where are the Geraldos? I don't know who the fuck the Eubanks are.
Kevin Eubanks.
Kevin,
right?
Jay Leno.
Yeah.
It's like, is he intentionally making fun of, like, lame shit that's not on public television? Because shit is now more lame than what's on public television.
Homer is saying it's lame. Like, he likes the lames thing.
He wants the safe lameness of broadcast TV.
Show is hey, public television has Sherlock, one of the best fucking shows the last 10 years.
But this was 1993 PBS.
Yes, well, but also, I as a kid, totally got this. Like, my dad would never do anything ever in charity.
And yeah.
Every single coffee mug in our house is the local public radio station.
That is so the opposite of my family. Like, we would never. My mom would want to, but I feel like my dad would just.
There's a mug they have in our house that is Mr. Rogers and Big Bird shaking hands. A picture that I have never been able to find on the internet.
So it's like Rumsfeld and Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Elvis
historic
and Nixon.
Moment. Yeah.
So that I want to bring up. Let's Save Tony Orlando's House.
Let's Save Tony Orlando's House.
A very funny joke, and also a song that is a very good song. So. The Kipster band Yola Tango,
who
was great, they did a song called Let's Save Tony Orlando's House. Let's give that a listen.
What?
So yeah. Is this like a deliberate Yola Tango Simpsons reference?
Yeah, they named it after it, and they do sing about Let's Save Wonderful. Tony Orlando's, and it's like, watch it burn collectively. It's a beautiful song. It's a great song. I also heard them do it acoustic before. Like, wow. You're not too cool for Yola Tango, guys. They're really
good. Yola
Tango's
amazing.
Yeah.
I agree.
They're great. And if that is your first song, that's a great first song to start with them. So it was just so cool as a hipster discovering them myself, like to find songs named after things like a obscure Simpsons line. I was like,
how I feel about Fallout Boy.
This is the band for me.
God.
It's like, Fallout Boy's been around so long, it's like, I don't feel like making fun of them anymore.
No.
They're still doing all right.
Homer is so dumb and giggly in this one. He's really stupid.
Well, they explain how that came to be with the army experiments, where it gave him, what, loss of equilibrium, giddiness, hair loss, I think.
Yes, yeah, those three things.
One of the first misappropriated Simpsons shitposting I saw was from my friend Tyler Nagata. Mm. He's been on our show before. Great man. But he's just, he had a... Back when we shared image macros via fucking Outlook and email at our old job, it's just like, it's that time again, and it was just E3 and the bear driving in a circle, and it still makes me laugh just thinking about it. It worked in games, people.
I loved the in-joke we had that if anybody shared something in an email that somebody else had heard of, they then would reply with a picture of Statler and Waldorf that said, old, like, you would be punished for saying, like, hey, look at this cool thing. Everybody's like, I saw it before, you suck. Like, it was.
So we do have the return of Ruth Powers. Yeah. After Homer is fantasizing about the circus and still singing, Ruth comes to the door, asks for a belt sander. You cut back to Homer using the belt sander. He got the belt sander out and started using it within seconds for no reason.
Yeah, we didn't get to see Sarah Gilbert's character in
this.
But
she's mentioned.
It's nice that that character left something behind. I really do like both Sarah Gilbert's character, or Laura and Ruth Powers.
Yeah,
I like the world weariness of Ruth Powers.
Yeah.
And they created her to give Marge a friend because she didn't have one. And this is like her last appearance for a very long time.
Season 14, I believe. It could be called either, it's either Large Marge or something else. Whatever episode Marge gets buff in that season.
Also the episode I always think Marge and Chains is.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I thought I was watching.
This is better than Marge and Chains.
It's way better.
Episode. Yeah, and then we also get another thing to date this.
Yes, it's great.
Hey, Homer, you want to get a beer on the way home?
I can't. I got to take my wife to the ballet.
Gotta go see the bear in the little car, huh?
Invisible cola. Time to stick it to the man.
Hey, careful there, Homer. I heard somebody lost an arm in there once.
That's just an old wives' tale. Got it. I'm stuck. Help me!
He's done for!
Let's get out of here!
Let's get out of here, yeah.
That's the same way the kids abandoned Bart in Bart the Daredevil.
That really is,
It's the same joke.
I love that joke, though.
All over Invisible Cola.
Crystal Pepsi.
Which, you know, I think that was just one of the first big marketing things that I noticed as a kid.
They rolled it out as if Jesus had come back to life.
Yeah. I think they licensed a current song in the top 20, which no commercial had really done yet.
It's Van Halen's Right Now.
It's the only reason I didn't
Super
get a clip, because it's just Right Now and text about Crystal Pepsi.
I mean, I prefer SNL's parody, Crystal Gravy. Can
Kevin
they ever Nealon show that sketch again?
Kevin Nealon biting into just soap.
Yeah, is that soap, or is it like some kind of
chicken.
Some
it
syrup
disgusting.
Or something? It is gross.
It's a beautiful thing, but the...
Crystal Gravy.
Crystal Pepsi, which... premiered lightly in 92, but really got big in 93.
And then disappeared forever until it came back,
it was 10
years ago.
It was one of many ways that soda companies want to sell diet sodas to men, because the idea, at least in America, is diet soda, that's for chicks. Yeah. I won't buy this.
What is it, Dr. Pepper 10 or something
like
that?
Dr. Pepper 10.
They have literal manly commercials to sell men sugar-free
like,
soda.
Is for men,
I only drink gendered sodas, all right? And that's secure in my masculinity.
Which is so stupid, but that's what Crystal Pepsi was, too. It was very low in calories.
You know what? I never realized that, but that's totally right.
It's caffeine-free.
They didn't want you to, because then you wouldn't buy it, because it's for girls.
It's caffeine-free and zero calories, and it's marketing it as like, it's the clear soda. Everybody's heard of Sprite and 7-Up.
Yeah,
you make 7-Up.
And it tasted nothing like Pepsi.
Yeah.
It didn't taste like Pepsi.
Though I had a real... thing. It was a prank my brother pulled on me that really upset me at the time. That it was.
Yes.
I hate soda and I don't drink it. And I mainly drink water. Mm. I had my glass and he must have like changed it out while I was turned away or left the room. And I pulled my glass to drink it, and it's soda, and it just breaks. It's Crystal Pepsi, and it just breaks my brain. I'm like, what? What did you
do? That is a killer prank.
You. It made me so mad. I should have taken it with gentle good humor, not, as Marge would have.
I thought you were going to say you only drink milk out of Mountain Dew bottles, like that birthday boy sketch.
I was trying to look up commercial. I just ended up on that video with 15 million views of the guy drinking a 1992 Crystal Pepsi
and then immediately
projectile vomiting everywhere.
We'll never see that success, Chris. I'm sorry.
All I have to do is vomit, which I'm willing to do. Henry will never do it.
So in 2015, they did bring it back, and you can still kind of buy it in now and then. They lightly make it. They learned the power of nostalgic sodas. It's why you can still get Surge. They 90s sodas are coming back to be sold to 30-year-olds who still drink soda.
I bet it's like huge in some weird market, like it's big in Dubai or something. That's all they drink in Dubai.
They called it Pepsi Clear in other places.
Oh, okay.
But it's a great name though, Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah.
You can snort it. You can smoke it.
It was always my fear as a kid to get my arm stuck in something. So Homer getting his arm stuck really scared me.
Because I did at this point in my life, I was stealing from vending machines. Mm. I knew the right. Oh, I can steal from that one. Great. Anything on the bottom row is mine.
We also mentioned Duckman. It had one of my favorite jokes about stealing a soda, because Duckman steals a soda successfully, doesn't get his arms caught, and then pulls it out. He's like, I bet a child could recreate this thing I just did and steal soda themselves. Do it. Stick it to the man, kids. And then Cornfed is handed a piece of paper like, but that would be wrong.
I love Duckman.
That show is... it's amazing. Oh, yes, finally, here's our introduction to Ruth.
Yeah. Hello?
Marge, this may be hard to believe, but I'm trapped inside two vending machines.
Sure, Homer. Trapped in vending machines. Okay. Would you two like to go to the ballet? That's girls' stuff.
Thanks, Marge. When my husband left, he took all our power tools, along with the car, my youth, my faith in mankind. Well, see ya.
Hey, wait!
I really think Ruth Powers and Enda Krabappel have a lot in common. They should really hang out.
They'd have a lot of stories.
Terrible men.
As in men, right?
Yeah.
And they both smoke cigarettes. They're both jaded.
I like when they go to the ballet together that Marge gets to like ogle the ballet guy with her, and just like Marge doesn't get to be free like this, and just her, it's good acting on Julie Kavner's part of giggling along like, ooh, I shouldn't laugh at this, it's a dirty joke about looking at his dick through his tights, but
it's the only way that makes ballet make sense. I don't mean to slam.
It's really about women staring at beautiful bodies as men. Right?
So boring, like almost all the time. Like I would rather watch street performers dance.
What bothers me as a pro wrestling fan is when pro wrestlers say, hey, this ain't ballet, you get hurt in this. It's just like, no, it is ballet.
It's literally ballet.
That's again more gendered shit of just
you're
like
telling a story with dance.
Yeah, you are man. You are performers in peak physical condition, and ballet performers get hurt all the fucking time. Like, and it is a staged performance. Yep. Like, it is ballet, and it's a real disrespectful to ballet when you use that term. It's a ballet.
This has been among the many things we've adopted in Simpsons vernacular. Holding onto the can, is absolutely one of them.
Homer, this is never easy to say. I'm gonna have to saw your arms off.
They'll grow back, right?
Oh yeah. Homer, are you just holding onto the can?
Your point being.
Fucking love him dejectedly walking out rubbing his arms.
I love the joke. They're not going to anesthetize him in any way. They're just going to saw his arm off.
They have to saw him off. That definitely made me gasp as a kid for sure. Like, oh my God, I got saw his
arm. And it's just like literally a table saw, not a surgical saw.
And that they were about to saw his arms off just as they find like, oh, we're looking in here. You're holding the can.
Yeah.
Homer again. The stupidest he's ever been in this episode.
I do love his fantasy about how the vending machines will make him more popular and he'll have like a function at weddings.
He'll be restocked and he can command the food at will, and that Maggie, even as an adult getting married, has a pacifier, to speak.
And it's, by the way, it's a little easy of a gay joke to say that Smithers wishes there was more mincing.
Yeah, I was watching this with my girlfriend. She's like, these jokes haven't aged very well, have they? These Smithers jokes.
There's a few like that. I'm just like, I get it. He's gay. He wants mincing.
It's like he's gay, but we can't say it, and that's the joke.
But this is one of my favorite clips of the whole show. if in case you didn't listen to the Patreon episode, the season three wrap up, I gave Barney the MVP line. The MVP of season three, and I can't do that for four, but this is he's back with great Barney, great Barney appearance.
One of the best Barney lines.
I envy you and Homer.
Thank you. Why?
If you ever met my ex-husband, you'd understand. All he ever did was eat, sleep, and drink beer.
Your point being?
And to top it off, he's been stiffing me on child support for the last 4 months.
Well, you were unlucky. But there are a lot of good men out there.
Hey, can I throw up in your bathroom? I'll buy something.
Ruth Powers' shudder is so well animated. They just immediately cut. I believe that came
they
from
said Susie, it was
Dieter.
Susie Dieter. Yeah, the one girl on the team, as Bill Oakley said about the directors,
who acted it out.
Yeah, she and did you notice that? I think it was intentional that Marge says "your point being" right after Homer says it. I think that shows that they're kind of taking from each other.
Yeah.
Or like who says it and who got it from the other, but. It was just a cute little thing, and yeah, that Barney is that disgusting.
Yeah, this almost got line of the show. I like how Homer is hurt that Marge has a friend because he doesn't really have the equivalent of Ruth.
This note is the funniest to me.
Yes.
Marge, I know you didn't believe me about the vending machines. That's why I had the fireman write me a note.
Mrs. Simpson, while we were rescuing your husband, a lumberyard burned down.
Don't! Lumber has a million uses.
I'm disappointed in you, but it turns out I had a wonderful time with Ruth Powers.
Ooh.
We're going to get contentious. Homer, yes, again,
so
gets a little jealous.
This is weird.
Can't go out on Saturday. That's our special night.
What's so special about it?
What the? Oh, I don't know. A little show called Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Dr. Quinn, has anybody ever seen Dr. Quinn?
I avoided it, but I looked this up, and it apparently premiered January of 93. So as they were writing this, it was probably a new show.
It was mad hyped.
Yeah.
It aired on Saturday, which I didn't have a life at this point, but this is when we rented games and movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we didn't watch television Saturday.
I wouldn't watch that on Saturday.
CBS period drama about the Old West doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was a big deal at the time of like
Jane Seymour, yeah.
Who's not a mega star, but had been in films. Her doing a TV show back then of like, no, movie actors do movies, TV actors do TV. They were very rarely, you know, crossover.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, oh, you can't star in the biggest films ever anymore, then star in a TV show.
Yeah, you'll be on Netflix.
You'll be Kiefer Sutherland. Like that, it's the Kiefer route.
It calls it basically the last successful Western on television.
Wow. More successful than Briscoe County Jr.?
or Deadwood? Or AMC's Hell on Wheels? The answer is yes.
I love Deadwood much. And so Homer's jealousy... Mm-hmm. It's a little weird. Well, it's both familiar to me and weird. It's familiar in that my dad was not a fan of my mom going out and doing things without him either. Mm-hmm. But it's really a control thing, and it's a bad look on Homer.
It is.
But it also, the way Homer is jealous is honestly in kind of like a sexual way, or he's like jealous that she's going on a date with someone who isn't him.
Yeah, it's telling he goes to their makeout point or whatever while her and Ruth are on their other adventure.
And Marge and Ruth go there separately too.
Oh, you're right.
So,
yeah.
And I think too, I don't want to speak for any listeners out there, of the 8 women listeners out there, I think the appearance of Ruth on their date in her like jeans and leather jacket and white shirt, like that is a very like classically butch lesbian look. I feel like it was, but not in a joke way of like that. It was more sexual than jokey, I'd say. So I wonder if it was kind of like an awakening moment for some viewers, young ladies watching, or just like, oh,
well,
I mean, like
this. Thelma and Louise.
That would be insane if Ruth Powers.
There's fan art on the internet.
The activation.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, well, Thelma and Louise had gay subtext to their relationship, which is why they had to die. You can't have a positive lesbian relationship in the 90s. They both have to die.
Hey, she also cheated on her husband. Man.
True.
You can't live after that.
And they kiss each other before they die. So
I remember in the Celluloid Closet, the documentary about gay films. The only problem with it now is like it's the history of gay films up to Philadelphia, not everything after. And so they talked to Susan Sarandon about
who's nude in that movie,
and they talked to Susan Sarandon about Thelma and Louise, and she thinks the kiss wasn't far enough, and she's also just like, yeah, they kiss, they're about to die together, and she's like, she says at the end of Butch and Sundance, those two should have like whipped their dicks out, and they're about to die. Why not? Like. Who cares?
Exactly.
I like them.
You're about to die. Suck somebody's dick. Please.
And Homer's man's best friend was a... Is that your final line of the
show?
Okay. How can you do this, Marge? How can you desert your children?
Have a blast, Mom. Rock the Casbah.
Man's best friend indeed.
So
and
dumb.
Then we have the Tonight's All About and the song switch up.
Yes, Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows, a one-hit wonder by Leslie Gore in 1965. Mm-hmm. And then when she cuts to the other song, and it's like one of the most current songs the Simpsons had ever used to that point.
It was only a few years old, I think.
1987, yeah. GNR classic.
A bit older.
Welcome to the Jungle.
Welcome to the Jungle off of Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah, Appetite for Destruction, then Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, and that's it.
You kids out there will know it as the trailer music from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
Oh,
yes,
right.
Exactly. GNR is as crazy and chunky as Axl Rose gets there. I'll still be great. But hey, he's coming out hard against Trump, so I'm pro Axl these days.
Reappearance of Lionel Hutz as the babysitter.
At his lowest
this
point.
Is the greatest Lionel. Awesome. This is my favorite Lionel ever.
Mr. Simpson, I was just going through your garbage, and I couldn't help overhearing that you need a babysitter. Of course, being a highly skilled attorney, my fee is $175 an hour.
We pay $8 for the night, and you can take 2 popsicles out of the freezer.
3.
2.
Okay, 2. And I get to keep this old birdcage.
Done.
That's a great exchange.
Yes.
And okay, too.
I think they were running out of things for him to do in court, so they're exploring his life outside of court, which we learn is very bad.
Very bad.
And this isn't the YMCA.
Though we skipped over a couple really funny things of Homer trying to call his friends and that Lenny... Like, this Lenny even isn't that sad that he's, like, shaving his girlfriend's legs or whatever. Yeah. Like,
shave up, stupid.
Soon enough, season 9, you'll see the inside of Lenny's house, like, please don't tell them how I live.
But Burns with this, like, lying on his stomach on a rug with his legs up in the air like a teen date with a Valentine's Day box of candy. Yeah.
Who is this?
And then Ned getting hung up on like, lowly oldly.
But he doesn't call Barney.
No, because he knows where to find him.
Yeah, I guess so. And he goes
the bathroom.
Yeah.
And then Homer, I like Homer's little green jacket that's like a nice touch. And the card with Bart, I love that so much. Like, blast that infernal card. The card says, do everything the opposite. And Homer's just smart enough to know not to give him the card. Like, here you know. It's so great.
Yeah, I should have got that.
I think that was the inspiration for Memento.
But in terms of behind the scenes of how I capture clips, it's sort of like funny moments that work well in audio. And for some reason, this episode had more than most.
Oh, wow.
I love the polite hick.
Hey, baby. Feel like getting lucky?
I am lucky. I have a husband and 3 wonderful children. Thank you very much.
Listen, baby, I always get what I want.
I said no.
Oh, did you? Oh, I completely misunderstood. Please accept our apologies.
That's the inverse of the Thelma and Louise scene, where I believe they blow up that guy's truck after he comes on way too strong in a very rapey way.
They murder him.
Oh, they murder him. Okay.
They murder him.
It's been a few years.
But
they blow up his truck?
For some reason, they end up passing the same semi on the highway 18 times.
Okay.
And that scene is so fucking outlandish and amazing. It looks incredible. Incredible.
Gotta watch this again.
That joke takes Simpsons dangerously close to a very dark place, and then it walks away from it.
Yeah, because that's one of, like, it's not a rape sequence per se, but it's like, it's...
uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And to see that happening to Marge, you're just like, ooh, this is...
Because, again, I just watched the movie, and like... Okay, they can't. I know they don't do this,
but you
can't even walk up that close to the line.
And this character on the show is based on David Merkin in appearance.
The guy who talked, the guy behind him is drawn.
And
like
he really does look like that. He's a bald guy with long hair and a big bushy mustache.
Yeah, it's... this was the first time ever I noticed that the place they went to shot kickers.
Yeah,
I had that written down to be my name.
Out. Yeah,
that is the joke, I guess, where it's not what you think it's going to be called.
It's definitely shit kickers. Well, it's them getting away with doing the joke of shit kickers.
Yeah.
But then Marge says, I've never been to shot kickers.
They literally conjured the word shit in everybody's head.
Yeah,
exactly what saying the word shit does.
Well, that they could just blank
so
it out with something that could easily have the space of an eye. I'm surprised that's a very Merkin-y thing of we got away with it.
I need to listen to this again because people were calling us out on apparently we were wrong about what was the music theme we thought was the Cape Fear theme. Did they get the LA Law theme?
Oh, sure, like lawyers work in big skyscrapers and have secretaries. Look at him, he's wearing a belt. That's Hollywood for you.
It sounds like the LA Law. Why don't we look it up?
There's not enough of it to really know, though. You know, it could be a sound alike that just grabs just enough.
But by the way, LA Law would be off in 1993. Like, its final season was done? This aired during the final season of LA Law, so it still worked, but it makes it feel so dated. Yeah. It's just like. They're watching Night Court on TV.
Yeah.
What? In prime time?
LA Law is it's like one of the last times I like tried to avoid live action shows.
Yeah.
That was the era when LA Law was on. It almost made a star out of Cormac Bernson.
Almost. Hey, he had a star turn in the major league films.
I should have looked up more about LA Law.
I mean, it's not worth
it. I'm mostly familiar with this through the Animaniacs parody, where they do extremely extremely good caricatures of the LA Law cast, animated by TMS, the greatest Japanese animators of all time. It just says, like, oh, you spend so much money on this, and I have no idea what you're referencing.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and if you like listening and stuff, it's a good thing this episode is brought to you by Audible. And before I tell you more about it, know that you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial of all Audible is. What is Audible? They've got over 180,000 different titles to choose from, ranging from audiobooks, comedy albums, radio shows, some of my favorite old-timey radio shows, and you can listen to them all on your iPhone, Android, MP3 player, desktop, tablet, doesn't matter, wherever you can plug in headphones. Audible's got all your bestsellers, your Game of Thrones, your Harry Potters, the latest biography from whatever comedian is you like, and they have become my go-to place to get audiobooks for an incredibly low cost. So once again, that's Audible, people, and you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial of the service.
Are you already tired of 2017? Jump into the past with 302010, a weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. Here's something you may remember from 1987.
Over the Top with Sly Stallone, Golan and Globus.
Yes.
But it is directed by Golan.
Wow.
And if you've seen the documentary Electric Boogaloo, like they were making a bunch of theatrical garbage, and this was their stab at... AAA garbage? I think Stallone got a huge payday. Biggest thing I'm bummed out of, this is a movie about underground arm wrestling.
Yeah.
And called Over the Top, even though Stallone has a movie called Fist. It's unfair. That
should
have been this
fist
movie.
When you're arm wrestling, you grab arms.
You go over the top, baby.
The plot here, he wants to have custody of his son,
yes.
And he is a truck driver who is also semi-pro arm wrestler.
He's a strange son. He runs away
because the mom is sick.
The mom is sick, and he's a stuffy military academy guy. He has to hang out with his truck driving dad in the underground world of over the top arm wrestling.
The big arm wrestling championship, and it's double elimination, which means
both arms.
That would be so great if you did both arms at the same time.
Wow.
Oh my god, if that's not a sport. Yeah.
He's arm wrestling four people at once.
A giant Ouroboros of arm wrestling in a circle.
How do I know who's winning? They call him Vishnu.
That's 302010, a weekly look back at what happened in music, movies, TV, and games every Thursday right here on the Lasertime Network.
And then when Homer goes to Moe's has never looked worse. Never.
Where everybody knows your name.
And they're just like silent. And Homer even wants to play a game. He's like, people drink more people drink less when they're having fun.
Yeah, we phased out dots.
Like, oh, so depressing. And then meanwhile, did you guys, speaking of music, when they went to the rave club, I swear that sounded like the Mortal Kombat thing.
There's a lot of rave songs that sound like that from the early 90s, yeah.
Don't you think your hair's a bit much?
Hey, Mrs. Simpson, you should try one of these smart drinks. Oh, wow, I'm wasting my life.
This is the most dated joke I've ever heard about
drinks.
A fad that doesn't barely existed.
I mean, you're supposed to have that instead of alcohol while you're tripping or rolling or whatever to replenish your body with vitamins and liquids and whatnot. I don't know, but it was around this time.
You want to go robo-tripping together?
No.
That's ecstasy and Robitussin.
Oh, Jesus. Both?
Yes,
well,
the same.
I think it was around this time people were just starting to find out about raves. And, like, 2020 was like, your kids could be raving. Mm-hmm. What happens at raves?
They'll have illicit sex.
Yeah.
This is bad things that can happen to white children.
No.
Yeah.
I was told my white children were safe.
And, the smart drinks were the cool thing. I think it's...
I've never heard of this.
I had heard of them, too. I looked up it now. They were big in the early 90s, but they were just another way of selling nootropics. Which are now how they're trying... They're being sold through Gorilla Mind pills, which don't take
gorilla
those.
Minds.
Yes,
but smart
Jesus
drinks were,
Christ.
Were bars that would serve non-alcoholic beverages with vitamins and other purported minerals or things that, like, no alcohol in it, but would enhance your intelligence.
Seemingly, they were just smart drugs,
otherwise known as think drinks. Yeah. And I tried to look up everything I could on this because this is a very short-lived fad. This article, and I'd only recommend it to you guys. It's from Discover Magazine. It just reminds you how far editorialization has come, because this woman has no fucking respect for my time. It does not get to the point about this at all. But all of it takes place at DNA Lounge, which, again, this is the reference for three people. It's like two blocks from here. That's where it all takes place.
I see.
Which is now one of the only bars I've ever heard of with a Patreon.
Wow.
Yeah, they need it.
Mm-hmm. And then Homer goes for a search of something that he still can't find stuff. I like that Bleeding Gums Murphy is on the cover of Jet. And Homer's very excited to
it's Garrett Morris's birthday.
Yes.
Ooh! Jet!
Woohoo! It's Garrett Morris's birthday!
He gets kicked out of the Quickie Mart and the library.
As a suburban white kid, this was my introduction to Jet magazine. I
was
never
it?
Heard of it before.
There's Jet and Ebony, right? It's the male and female versions of that.
Yeah, there were advertisements on TV for them all the time as when I was a kid.
Yeah, I never saw them. I was a very sheltered white child. Yeah. I know. But Homer getting that excited for Jet magazine, which is an African-American culture-focused magazine. So the joke is, why would Homer read that as a white man?
He's so excited about Garrett Morris's birthday.
Me too.
Nah.
He's
rules.
A treasure.
This is I'm giving line of the show for reasons.
Okay.
I will say.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's the joke.
What was it you wanted to show me?
This.
You're not going to hunt me for sport, are you?
Great line.
Relax, Marge. I'd never turn a gun on a human being. My husband, on the other hand. Come on, you try it.
No, I couldn't.
Yeah. Just breathe slowly and squeeze the...
I hit it!
My cans! My precious antique cans! Oh, look what you've done to him.
Dan Castellaneta's Walter Brennan. We heard him before. Like, I wouldn't get far with old Chomper.
You face your galloping horse.
So Robin Williams is doing an Aladdin, Walter Brennan. Holy shit. Whenever you see a clip of him, like, that was a real person?
Yeah.
Who talked like
really
that?
He really talked like that.
Sang songs?
It is so specific. It has to be an imitation of someone. You know,
I think
I say that line. I said that line twice this week before I watched this episode. No, it just like, my precious switch. Look what you've done it.
I think Al Jean said that Dan Castellaneta was known for his like wide range of impressions, including Edward Albee, the playwright.
That's
like
right,
he would do so many weird impressions, which is one of the reasons why they chose him to do voices on The Simpsons. Like, well, just use him. He does these great voices.
It's perfect. It's funny that he's become. One of the best voice actors of his generation. When at first he was just like, "I'm a sketch performer. I'm from Second City, and I'll just do sketches with Tracy Ullman." Yeah,
they'll pull you in, and I'll talk like this.
But his problem is that he's a bald man, so he'll only be a character actor. He's
poor
a scrawny
Dan.
Bald man.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good deal for him then.
When they go up to like the makeup point, the Springfield Hollywood sign.
I love that Homer gets so boned up by smashing a weather station.
Yeah, but
he got real
all worked
pretty
up.
Hair.
It reminds me of. The few times I was able to successfully hook up with a woman in high school, it always followed like mailbox baseball and like, let me put my hand down your pants. It's, and like just immediate turn of like
I'll
primal
be so
pubescence.
Smooth with this.
It's the two modes of the teenage male, really.
That's what it
just
felt like to
violence
me.
And sex.
Like, how did I break into a church and then finger somebody? Police
don't want to know,
like,
Chris.
Right. but okay, that's
is this the debut of the Springfield sign?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't
Homer
sure.
Homer and I used to come up here on dates. Homer, stop that!
that. It's just a weather station.
Come on, Marge. It's fun to smash things. I smashed it good. You got real pretty hair.
It does turn on a dime. Just like violence.
I can just remember me being like this in a couple instances.
I like those designs are them right before Bart is born.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
It's a good pull of the old designs. And then runs into Wiggum, which again, as stupid as Homer is this episode, Wiggum is actually stupider. Oh,
I love them teamed up. It's great.
They're such a great pair.
Yeah.
So Wiggum had sex with a male blow-up doll?
Yeah, make sure it's a woman, though, because it's also first, making illegal moonshine.
We have a first appearance. It's the first appearance of Miguel Sanchez.
Oh.
Mr. Hutz, why are you burning all your personal papers?
As of this moment, Lionel Hutz no longer exists. Say hello to Miguel Sanchez.
This is a dumb story, but if my buddy Melendez is listening, I just saw this episode in syndication, and he got a dog, and he's Hispanic, and I'm like, you should name your dog Sanchez. And I'm like, I'm not naming my fucking dog Sanchez. Shut up. Shut the
it
fuck up.
It sounds like a dirty Sanchez joke.
And he brought it, because that's what I thought it was. And it was just because I just heard Lionel Hutz say that.
Miguel Sanchez.
And he passingly mentioned it to his father, Luis, and he's like, yeah, the dog's being called Sanchez. So for 16, that's the only Simpsons reference that resulted in a 16-year name of a dog. And there's another dog named Sanchez, and it all came from Lionel Hutz right here.
So beautiful. Is Miguel Sanchez sort of the Mexican take on John Doe? It's just like two very common names.
Well, it's funny that a lot of Simpsons jokes go back to, we're going to run away to Mexico.
Yeah.
That's their out for most people. Like, well, I screwed up my life. Time to run to Mexico.
Yeah, we saw Willie and Skinner propose that.
And Krusty takes him there.
Yeah.
But now when I hear Miguel Sanchez, I think of Anthony Weiner's Carlos Danger his fake name.
Oh, Carlos Danger. Yes, Jesus Christ.
Look, Anthony Weiner, I've heard the joke before of like, if the Clintons actually secretly murdered people, Anthony Weiner would have died a decade ago. Like, he'd be fucking dead. Like, that guy's the worst.
Strangled by his own boner.
Homer gets picked up by Wiggum. Mm. They start driving and see the car, and it's a beautiful scene.
We're in pursuit of two female suspects. One is wearing a green dress, pearls, and has a lot of blue hair.
A lot of blue hair? What a freak. It's Marge! She's become a crazed criminal just because I didn't take her to the ballet.
That's exactly how Dillinger got started.
Really? Great.
I don't want to be a wet blanket, but maybe you should give yourself up.
Marge, it's a matter of principle. I just can't let that deadbeat win again. You're with me, aren't you?
I should say something reassuring yet noncommittal.
Look, Marge, there's no reason for you to get dragged into this. Once we lose the cops, I'll let you out.
Well, I don't think they're going to be that easy to lose. I mean, these are professional lawmen, and...
Oh, my God, it just disappeared! It's a ghost car! There are ghost cars all over these highways, you know.
Hold me.
Only if you hold me.
God, they're so stupid. So Wiggum wanted to pull them over because one taillight was smaller than the other.
Looked smaller than the other.
And previously, Ruth Power says she wants to get home before that naked talk show comes on. Mm. That was a real thing. It originated in Seattle. It's called the Robin Bird Show. 1977 to today. Yeah. And it was popular enough.
Public access.
Yeah, it was popular enough for SNL to do a sketch on it in 1997. Sherry O'Terry played Robin Bird. Yeah. And this is real. Like, I knew it had to come from somewhere, but that's it.
I meant to get confirmation of that because I know for... I had Triumph the Insult Dogs album, and he just has a line like, fuck anybody who has shit to say about Robin Bird.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and I only knew her from the Sherry O'Terry sketch, because obviously they weren't airing that shit in Florida.
And now there are several naked shows, like Naked Dating, and I'm sure,
oh, that's right.
Or Dating Naked, I forget what
Dating
it is.
Dating Naked, I remember there was a... they accidentally failed to censor one woman, like, in this one shot of, like, it was naked wrestling, and... It was almost like they chose the most humiliating thing. Like, boy, your taint has never looked uglier than in this 1 second of rolling around with this guy.
Like presenting full beeve on the ground.
I mean, just everything. Yeah. Like, it was like, it was every... It was everything. I was disgusted. I can't.
I took offense.
And, I did love that Wiggum loves. He played Sunshine Lollipops and loved it.
Yeah, that was a great how the both acts end with the same song, but it's a different take. Yeah. And
Sunshine Lollipops and rainbows, everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny when you're near the rain clouds disappear here and I'm.
Homer is sad in the back seat, and then he's like, he gets into it. He's like, yeah.
Fun song, man. I feel happy just playing that.
And that's that's his chase music. Again, because Wiggum is that stupid.
Yeah, and it's like they're just being fucking morons, whereas Marge is having like pivotal moments. She wants to walk away from the situation and stay out of trouble. And I love the coffee house scene.
At the Seething Sisters Diner.
Seething Sisters.
This cross-country flight from the law would be hell if we didn't stick together.
Hey, friends stick together.
It's amazing how through all this adversity we manage to stick together.
If there's one thing decent folk do, it's stick together.
I hate it when the waffles stick together.
Sticking together is what good waffles do.
Sticking together is what good waffles
love
do.
Love Harry's take there.
Yeah, oh man, and whenever I eat a waffle, I think of that line and I say it out loud to my weary girlfriends.
Before you eat every waffle, yeah. You say that line. And I gotta give it to the animators for really good amount of variations on the Thelma and Louise design. There did three different ones.
There are several Thelma and Louises having heart-to-hearts. Yeah.
Distinct from each other, all these non-lesbians hanging out on their run from the law.
And then Kearney, see you later, loser.
That's great. I love that. But when the guy comes out and says, hey, you kid, that was exactly like the hey, you kid guy. Flower.
Candy Most Dandy. Mr. Dandy.
Yeah, Mr. Dandy.
Hey, you kid.
Hey, you kid. You kids. Hey. It was, I think it felt intentional. It was so similar to from the Telltale Head.
Yeah.
Which you can only hear on Patreon.com.
The running gag of Wiggum, because we have some friends in police dispatch, and I love the running gag of Wiggum being terrible at calling an APB.
Oh, yeah.
Dispatch, this is Chief Wiggum back in pursuit of the rebelling women.
All right, your current location?
I'm on a road. Looks to be asphalt. Trees, shrubs. I'm directly under the earth, son. Now.
Suspect is hatless. I repeat, hatless.
And the also when they're cooking the eggs on the thing, he's like, if we can keep these down, we'll be sitting pretty. Like, why do you have to eat these? Just stop at a diner.
Where did the eggs come from?
Why are you carrying unrefrigerated eggs?
It's all, I mean, you know, hey, pasteurization is a big lie. You can unrefrigerate eggs.
Uh-huh. I can't, this Kent Brockman joke.
I love this.
So much new meaning now that we're in a different age of the internet and we speak publicly.
This would be a legitimate editorial on some cable stations.
Real.
Yeah.
Suspects have been identified as Ruth Powers and Marge Simpson of Springfield.
Cool. I always knew someday Mom would violently rise up and cast off the shackles of our male oppressors.
Shut your yap.
At the risk of editorializing, these women are guilty. They must be dealt with in a harsh and brutal fashion. Otherwise, their behavior could incite other women, leading to anarchy of biblical proportions. It's in Revelations, people!
The idea that they have that standby screen ready. It's one of my favorite still images of The Simpsons.
We get one of our many technical difficulty screens.
And when they pause for a beat, it cuts to Bart and Lisa like he's looking at them through the TV.
Yeah.
But he can't be actually reacting to them. But that's another Merkin thing, too, that the TV just talks to you. And Kim Brockman is speaking to The Simpsons in that room. And but that is just TV now. That was relaxed if that was Alex Jones.
Yeah.
The guy who is giving tips to our president.
Ugh. Sandy Hook was a false flag. What am I doing? Anyway, here's the Thelma and Louise moment. They drive towards the chasm, and again,
never heard of the Simpsons Springfield's Grand Chasm.
Why didn't they use the Springfield Gorge? It existed.
Yeah,
they
think Merkin didn't know about that history. There,
they made a new gorge.
They've been driving for almost 2 days. I guess I assume they weren't there.
I guess they're crossing state lines, so it wouldn't be the Springfield
Gorge.
That's
true. They must have already passed Capital City.
Oh. 4th Street and D?
And again, if all you watch, and I think Thelma and Louise is on Amazon Prime right now, is the ending. It is so beautiful.
It's also one of the Wayne's World endings.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
The Thelma and Louise ending.
Wayne's World 2, right? Not the
Wayne's I thought it was
one.
Wayne's World
oh,
1.
Oh, you know, it's I like one. The, yeah. I like the, I don't, not wish fulfillment, but like, when Marge went away to Rancho Relaxo...
You're right,
That was always... I'd never seen Thelma and Louise, so whenever someone said it, I'm like, okay, Louise, that's...
Yeah, okay, Thelma. Let's go, Thelma. Yeah, and that was 2 seasons ago, and they're finally doing their full-scale Thelma and Louise parody. Wow.
Yeah. But here's the... I love the chasm confrontation.
We really are going to make it now.
Oh, no! They're headed right for the Grand Chasm!
Oh, my God! They're going to drive right into it just to teach us men a lesson. And it's all my fault.
Marge. Marge.
Homer?
Look, Marge, I'm sorry I haven't been a better husband. I'm sorry about the time I tried to make gravy in the bathtub. I'm sorry I used your wedding dress to wax the car. And I'm sorry. Oh, well, let's just say I'm sorry for the whole marriage up to this point.
You're right. I am lucky to have him.
But please, Marge, don't drive into that chasm.
Chasm?
They didn't see the chasm.
Yeah, I mean, the joke is that Thelma and Louise were going to kill themselves on purpose, and they didn't know they were headed towards a chasm.
I knew the ending of the film, but it's still, like, for a mainstream Hollywood movie, so pretty bizarre. Like,
it really is,
both characters punch their own ticket, and there's no resolution.
But and the oh, sorry, go
what
ahead.
Happened to Michael Madsen? Did he ever find anybody?
I was right. It was Wayne's World 2 had the Thelma and Louise ending.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Wayne's World 1 was...
Scooby-Doo.
A sad ending, Scooby-Doo ending.
My God.
Happy ending.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That, so Thelma and Louise was the next one. I didn't have the budget in Wayne's World 1 to do a Thelma and Louise ending.
And I love the garbage sequence.
Yeah.
Ha! And to think, those idiot environmentalists were protesting this landfill.
Solid waste. I could kiss you.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh. I think this was pizza.
Oh, we're so close to pizza.
Oh, God, I can't wait. Yeah, I mean, so when Wiggum and Homer go over the cliff, it freezes and it fades to white, just like in Thelma and Louise. Yeah. Is that the movie ends conclusively?
Yes.
Just it's that and it's over?
Yeah, you don't see the car land. You just see it fly over the cliff.
I wasn't sure if there was a scene of men shaking their heads
to
or something.
To be honest, like the car dips to the right in kind of the same way as it does in the film.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Wiggum's car screams right past it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And, yeah, good job,
Mark Kirkland.
The idea that they were saved by disgusting waste in a land, like a beautiful chasm being turned into a landfill saves their lives.
That feels very Merkin-y, that pollution saved them.
And how do we go into the next reference? Because if you don't know this, this is such a long joke.
You got to play that death jingle, Chris, because this man is dead.
That's right.
20 years ago, he died.
Death stalks you at every turn. Ah, there it is, death.
So this is George Fenneman, who was the narrator on Dragnet. If you look him up, he had a long and storied career over TV and radio and everything else. But he's the guy who says the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. That's what you hear when Dragnet starts.
So if you don't know what Dragnet was, Dragnet. It was an early police procedural in the 50s first. And starring Jack
Webb.
Dude,
it was on radio.
It started on radio.
Oh, sorry,
and
it was
George
radio.
It's one of the few shows that have success in both of those mediums.
And speaking of Duckman, Corn Fed is based on Jack Webb.
Yeah,
that's right.
The show,
So,
just the facts, man.
And Jack Webb was the most like boring, straight-laced man there ever was in the 50s. He was pure 50s, and so... On the 50s show, it was a more simple show, especially for the time. I remember seeing it as an example of just having the one shot of a guy's face and the other guy's face is because TV screens were 8 inches and they could only really show faces. And then in the late 60s, early 70s, Jack Webb's like, we got to set these hippies straight and make a show for now and of new Dragnet.
Those episodes are fucking hilarious.
And Rob Reiner plays a hippie on one of those, right? Yeah,
I remember Boy Blue. That was one of my all-time favorite bad, so bad it's good.
It's,
and so that's when I saw Dragnet was in the reruns on Nick at Night that were of the 70s one that were made to make, or 60s one, made to make fun of Dragnet.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so bad it's good. It's Dragnet. It's so funny.
But it was a popular radio show. It has a popular black and white version. It has a popular color version.
It has a wrap with Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks. Chris,
movie.
You are including that in your upcoming episode, are
oh,
you?
Oh, yes.
Okay, thank
yes.
God.
But it's out by now. Laser Time.
Yes.
Listen to worst
do,
raps
do
ever.
Do you want
to
hear Tom Hanks rap? I do.
Yeah, it's exactly well, how you'd think it would sound.
City of crime, we got to stop those pagans from rhyming.
But just like, I'm only bummed out that...
That ain't nice.
Because I know Dragnet pretty okay. I haven't seen a ton of episodes or anything, but there's still clips still emerge online because occasionally, like, Joe Fried and his partner will just give the business to hippies. You think you're the first one to have problems, son?
Yeah. And I mean, the Dragnet characters would appear in Mother Simpson
yes.
to help with the investigation, like, just
obviously,
right out
Jack
of the show.
Webb was dead.
Yeah. But it's a cultural partner. Touchstone that's stretched across mediums and generations, mm-hmm. and I feel like there hasn't. I know they tried to remake Dragnet again. I don't
yes.
really see how you do that.
But it was funny. They actually had one, I remember seeing a clip of it recently pulled up because of how timely it is now. Just like, hey, freedom of speech does mean you can say anything you want, but you need to really think about that.
You need
that.
To deal with the consequences of that, son.
And think about the freedom, the people who gave their lives to give you that freedom to do that.
Yeah.
Think about that. But, yeah, George Fenneman, they got him to do it. I let's hear that ending. Yeah. I want to.
Ruth Powers was tried in Springfield Superior Court. The judge dismissed her ex-husband's auto theft charges and forced him to pay all back child support.
That would have never happened.
Mr. No. Powers blamed the outcome on his lawyer, one Lionel Hutz. Lionel Hutz,
that's right.
A.K.A. Miguel Sanchez, A.K.A. Dr. Nguyen Van Thock, was paid $8 for his 32 hours of babysitting. He was glad to get it. Marge Simpson was charged with a violation of Penal Code Section 618A, wanton destruction of precious antique cans. She was ordered to pay 50 cents to replace the cans and $2,000 in punitive damages and mental anguish. Homer Simpson was remanded to the custody of the United States Army Neurochemical Research Center at Fort Meade, Maryland, for extensive testing.
Woo-hoo! Homer can hear him.
The Simpsons are going to Fort Meade.
Even that jingle
yeah.
is like, I instantly understand what that is. And
it's about Tums, right? They're selling Tums.
Oh my God, Bob. Tums, forgot about that.
Yeah.
Marge smoking is even like, that's what the ex-cons would do in the lineup. Because they would show each person in that sentencing. And also, just so you knew, crime doesn't pay. Like, that was the message of it. So
I forgot that Lionel Hutz was Ruth's husband's lawyer, which is why
she
got
failed.
Justice.
So that's
yeah.
the only way a woman would get justice like that.
I tried. I know the writers had to have been big Dragnet fans.
Oh, yeah.
This is a huge deal for them. But again, it's a 2-minute parody that, like, I don't think reads now mm-hmm. at all.
But
I tried my best to find George Fenneman specifically because Dragnet mm-hmm. had numerous announcers.
Oh yeah,
but if this is correct, this is a much younger version of him.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Oh God, the cops are here!
And I think that's why the show is sort of beloved because it's so fucking earnest and mm-hmm. sincere all the time.
It's right in your face, and if you, mm-hmm. I think it also works if like you. You're somebody who likes seeing cops beat up hippies, and if you're somebody who would identify with the hippies and are laughing at this show made to make you feel guilty about hippies. So that was from the black and white original version.
Yeah, I mean, that show was for all the war veteran dads with a haircut you could set your watch to.
And I found a great clip of the. It's amazing. This is just an amazing video to me. It is every ending to Dragnet, but just the audio, none of the video of it. So you can listen to 40 minutes to hear the every outcome of a Dragnet episode. But here's a little taste.
The suspect was found guilty on four
That's
counts
him.
Of bank robbery. Bank robbery is a federal offense which is punishable by imprisonment for not more than 25 years
so
on each count.
That was George Fenneman.
And again,
that's
47 minutes long and just against a black screen.
Bank robbery is a crime.
Has more views than anything on our YouTube channel.
That was it. That was a fun ending to the episode. In my memory, I thought of it as more of a direct Thelma and Louise parody, but it's really like 4 minutes.
In almost
really.
Everything, all my recollections of The Simpsons, it's never really a direct parody. I think
unless it's Cape Fear,
Unless it's Cape Fear.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That's why that was
so
shocking.
That's the closest. I mean, there would be the Mad World parody, but again, it's
but
just sort
just
of half
ending.
That.
That's
yeah.
the ending. It's not that until he said,
like
I buried
it. Like a third
it.
That, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, in later seasons, you would get the one that was like The Departed, which just has The Departed,
barf.
A very lengthy one.
In 24 minutes, the yeah. 24, yeah, who cares?
Boo. But this was a really fun episode that I like that Marge got to do stuff in an episode not written by David M. Stern.
Yeah, we'll see a lot more of Marge, the exploration of Marge, I think, with Merkin and Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, I think. I think they do a little more with her.
Yeah, I do wish Marge and Ruth had kissed, though.
I was
looking forward to that. And that's what I love when Homer sees the two of them together and goes like, young love. Like, does Homer know they're two women?
They're gay married in my head canon. So,
this lesbian bar doesn't have a fire exit. So Homer knows how to
What's her problem?
Lesbian.
Yes. That was Talking Simpsons. Thank you so much for listening. I have been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also write for fandom.com every goddamn day about video games. Kids love those damn video games. And I write for somethingawful.com every other Thursday. A new comedy article. Go to somethingawful.com. My other podcast is Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast every Monday at retronauts.com or search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. The best episode to get into if you're a fan of Talking Simpsons is our Bart versus the Space Mutants episode. It is just like an episode of this, but we're making fun of something bad instead of treasuring something good. So please listen to that. Just look for it on Retronauts.
Christmas special.
Oh, that's
too.
Good,
that's
too. Yeah.
Look for me on an upcoming episode where I show up late and terrible.
Yes. Breath of the Wild will poison us all. But that's been me. Who else wants to talk?
HENEREYG on Twitter. That's where you'll find me, Henry Gilbert. And you can also find my work on fandom.com, just the same as Bob's. And I'd also like to let you know that I'm still part of the Laser Time family and that is supported on patreon.com/lasertime. This show wouldn't be possible without it. $5 a month or more will get you access to hundreds of hours of classic content from the Goonie Gang. Exactly. And that includes the entire first season exclusively of Talking Simpsons, as well as our Patreon exclusive seasons 2, 3, and 4 wrap up. So if you love Talking Simpsons, you will find great content there on Patreon, as well as tons of great other stuff, including exclusive videos, commentaries, the weekly bonus time show. You hear clips of bonus time every episode, pretty much. I always put it in there, and it's so great. Give it a listen, guys.
I believe at this point on Patreon, you will have access to a live commentary, video commentary, sunk in everything of the first episode of Power Rangers in honor of the new movie. And revisiting that was hilarious.
Is that the pig episode, right?
No, that's the one I remember the most.
I remember watching that one first, but I guess that's not the first one.
They sort of fight Goldar. Goldar.
Okay, all right. Nice.
It was a ton of fun to revisit that show, and I only needed to do it in one episode once. Maybe the Green Ranger Saga.
The Green Ranger Saga is a great five-part thing of a children's cartoon.
If you like these dumb podcasts, you might like Laser Time. Laser Time is topic-based, and recent episodes include something with King, in honor of King Kong. I think we've tried to measure every movie monster and see who's the tallest, as well as the worst raps in history, where you will hear Tom Hanks and Bart Simpson rap together.
Excellent.
And the worst duet of all time, because I'm going to have to put it together myself. But that and 30-20-10, if you like the beginning segment, then it's a show sort of like what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago in history. There, we talk lightly about a couple of Simpsons episodes, because we just met Cecil. We met Hank Scorpio.
Chris, really?
Yes. It's awesome. We just met John Waters' character 20 years ago.
My goodness.
It's pretty nuts what's happening with The Simpsons 20 years ago, and I guess we'll get there eventually.
Soon enough.
Yes, so thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Bart's Inner Child. See you then.
Love it. Sunshine.